Up next, the world's leading expert on alien abductions joins us, Daryl Sims, the alien hunter. Some great stories. Wait till you hear what Daryl has to say when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you about Daryl Sims, the alien hunter, the world's leading expert on alien abductions. His 38-plus years now of field research has focused on physical evidence, led to his groundbreaking discoveries of alien implants. As a former military police officer and CIA operative, Daryl has a unique insight to the alien organization, which he believes functions similarly to an intelligence agency. He is also a skilled therapist who has helped hundreds of alien experiencers all over the planet come to terms with what they have witnessed. A couple of his books include Alien Hunter, The Evidence and Truth About Alien Implants, and Alien Hunter, The Evidence in Light, and his video, Best Evidence, Profiling the Alien. Welcome to the program, Daryl. Good to have you back.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, George.
And I am so glad you are doing what you're doing. You know, when we lost Dr. Roger Lear, I thought I knew you were into alien abductions in a big, big way. But you really have stepped up on the implants, too, now. You basically have replaced Dr. Lear.
Well, he was actually, Roger and I were partners at one point in this, and I brought the implant phenomena to him, and he wasn't really sure about all that at first. He, Alice Levy was his best friend, and she introduced me to him, and that's how I met Roger, and just entered the relationship from that point on.
I miss him, don't you?
Yeah, of course.
He was a good guy. Good guy indeed. What have you been up to over the last couple of years since we last chatted?
Well, you know, last thing I remember about you, when I saw you was, it's a birthday party, you're contacting the desert.
And yep.
I'll say that was an ordeal. Oh, very good. They really treated you right.
I miss those live events, don't you?
I do. In fact, I'm going to one down in McCallum in Edinburgh, Texas this weekend. In fact, at 10 o'clock in the morning, I'll be leaving.
Well, good. You be careful and enjoy yourself. And we're thinking of having a live program in Everett, Washington in September. We were going to do it last year, but of course COVID hit in a big way. But this too shall pass. I don't think it's going to be around forever.
You're right on target. Right on target about that.
Some of your latest work, let's talk about what you've been studying and what you've been working on. What's breaking these days in your agenda?
Oh, this is really weird. Had a police officer contact me, and he's a police officer in a special way. He's a really good cop, and he's also in the medical field. And long story short is he sends me this object that he found embedded in his back, and he said, I know you're the head implant guy and all that, but he said, I can't figure out what this is. And he's had apparently these UFO events along with it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that interested me a great deal because of the background and the police officer and so on. And then he sent this to me, and then a few weeks later, he called me back and he said, I need to talk to you immediately. And I said, okay, what about? And he says, two FBI agents in two separate cars approached my house, and they wanted to know about my alien problem that I was having.
Jeez. How'd they even know about it?
Thank you. And he said, I was a little more than alarmed. And I said, what alien problem would that be? And he said they were choking and gasping, trying to get the word alien out. They finally said, the alien's been bothering you. And he said, I actually have had a problem like that. And they got loosened up a little bit and found they established some rapport with this weird subject. And then they said, like to know about the object that you found.
My gosh.
He said, I hadn't told anybody about it. How do they know this stuff? And then he said, they asked him if he still had the object. And he says, well, no. He said, I had it sent off to be studied. And both the officers looked at him, looked at each other, and then looked at him and said, Oh, you mean Sims, Daryl Sims?
They've been listening in on this guy or something.
Yeah. So, of course, the big question came to me, the reason he wanted me to be concerned, he said, how do they know all about this stuff? And I said, well, I'm not much of a conspiracy buff. And I said, but here it goes. I said, many years ago on Art Bell, back in the 1990s, I was talking to him for the first time and then the second time. And then I decided to have a little fun. Back then I had a cryptologist who was a webmaster, and he was sitting there listening that night, and I just decided to drop some old terms, intelligence terms, into the conversation without mentioning anything about intelligentsia, just to see who was listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, my cryptologist called the next morning, and he was screaming at me. I said, hey, don't talk trash like that to me. He said, what are you doing? He said, what you? And I said, well, I just wanted to see who was listening. He said, well, they're all listening. I said, who? And he said, everybody. And I said, he said, we got 250 hits last night. And I said, well, that's good. You know, we got a lot of hits on the site. And he said, you don't understand. The whole alphabet intelligence agencies are listening. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, this is what I did when I was in the service. As a cryptologist, he said, we got hit by 250 computers in the intelligence community last night.
Wow.
And I said, what? He said, three of them were in the White House and they're NSA computers.
He could track that.
He's that good. Well, the reason that's kind of interesting to me, besides that, is later a woman approached me and two of my doctors out in California, back not long after that. And she's a real pretty lady. I'd never met her before, never seen her before. And I said, so why am I here? What's this about? And she said, well, I wanted to talk to you. She said, Hillary and Bill Clinton are my best friends.
Hmm.
I later identified her as Uma Aberdeen. I believe that is her. She's a very, very pretty lady. And anyway, they said they were very interested in your work, and I said, okay. She said, would you like to have some money for your research? I said, well, certainly, because of what I do, but under these conditions, no. And she said, why not? And I said, let me explain something to you. I said, I'm a private investigator and was former military police officer. And if ever things ever happen in these type of situations, in other words, that money is not exactly pure, so to speak. Little people go to jail, big people get off. They get away.
That's right.
Every time. That's the name of the game. And I said, I'm not interested. Of course, the two doctors were horrified because there were several million dollars mentioned, and they were all thinking, you know, a million for all three of us, a million for research. That's not what I had in mind. I had like $4 million for research, period. But anyway, so I'm not unaware that folks are listening. The important thing is I want to know specifically who, and I found out that day. But my cryptologist was, he was about ready to skin me alive. He was furious.
He didn't realize that, did he?
No, and if I told him, he'd have just said, you're a conspiracist.
You know, yeah.
You're trying to make yourself more important. And I got 600 phone calls and emails in the next few weeks from people on coast to coast. And here's one illustration, and this is not bragging. This is a hand of God, true story. One guy called me and identified himself and his position, and I realized this guy is so far above my pay grade. I had a top secret clearance. It's reduced to a secret now.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy blew me out of the water. I mean, he was way above my pay grade. And he said, he was in tears. He said, I'm an abductee and I need help. And you could help me. You could do this. And I said, I'm going to tell you something I've never told anybody. And I want you to pay strict attention and do this immediately. He said, what's that? get off the phone now. Get off while you can. You're in a great deal of trouble if you get caught. I said, they don't care about me. I am not the star of this show, so to speak. You are. And who's calling me is what they're listening to, not me, because I'm public. I put out almost everything I have. I make public.
You make public with it, sure.
I don't care. It's for humanity. It is. We don't charge anything for what we do. It's philanthropic work. I said, please get off the phone, sir. And he was in tears. He said, but I thought you were going to help me. I said, I would. I do all the time. But I can't in your case. I said, you're going to lose your career, and you may be in a lot more trouble than you can imagine. Please get off the phone right now. And he hung up. But there were several people that called like that. I went to the Native American Conference in Dulce last year, 2 years ago. And a gentleman came up to me, and he was in tears. And he, again, pay grade far above mine in the intelligence area. And he was in tears. He said, I am suicidal. He said, I've thought about ending my life several times. And he started telling me about some of his operations, what he did. And I said, please don't do that. I said, I'm telling you, I would never tell anybody anything. That's not the point. I'm totally trustworthy. I'll never betray the country, even in any sense of the word. I said, but that's not the point. I said, I know you're hurting. I said, and I'm going to be back here soon. And when I do, I'll meet with you privately and personally, and I'll work with you, I swear it. And I said, but don't tell me all this other stuff. You don't. That's not necessary. I don't need to know any of it, period.
This officer's implant that he took out, he handed it over to you. Did you get it analyzed? What was it?
I do have it. And since then, there's been something else.
So oh, boy.
It gets better. I just love this guy. We've become best friends. He's my family, all our lives, have... rescued animals, wild animals. We had a tiger, a Bengal tiger, a mountain lion, and 3 giant pythons at one time.
Jeez.
But we've done this all our lives and still rescue animals from time to time. My daughter now in Scotland has got she rescues birds, every kind of animal, bird you can imagine, gets hit by cars, runs into the side of trucks and things like that in Scotland. And she replaces beaks on animals, birds that fight each other and get them torn off, and does great stuff. The point is, he did the same thing. He is an animal guy, and he sent me pictures of his animals, and I'm amazed at some of the stuff. But to answer your question specifically, we have not had it analyzed. We have a lab that we use here in Houston, and we have 4 different objects besides his that we want to make comparisons on.
What's it look like, Darrell?
It is small and black. It appears to have broken into several pieces. I'm not sure why that is. It was embedded in his skin. It wasn't under the skin like many of these are. Many of them are subcutaneous. In rare cases, some of the implants are deep inside the body. Like the case I did in India, New Delhi, India, several years ago. That lady had 3 implants, one that was very easy to see under her skin, above the clavicle, and then she had one deep in her leg and then one very deep in her side. And the surgeon, who was never told anything, the surgeon that was there from India, he figured it out after a while. None of this is natural. He saw that for a while. And he says, Darrell, he said, what I'm looking at here on this x-ray, the one on the inside and her thigh, and especially the one in her side, he said, when you come back to New Delhi, please let me do the surgery on this. He said, I would love for you to assist me with it. Please let me do that. He said, I am so excited. He said, this stuff, I've never seen anything like it ever, anywhere. So in reference to his case, the police officer's case, we have not analyzed that yet, because we're going to do our comparisons, and then we're going to take his to the lab separately, and they still don't know anything. about any of this stuff, but I'm telling you, it doesn't take very long for them to get a very clear picture. None of this is natural, and we've never seen it before.
How did he extract it, Daryl? Did he do it to himself, or what happened?
He had memory of some memory of UFO events, which is interesting to me for his case, and he found it embedded in his skin, in his back, and he finally pulled on it and played with it enough. He finally got it out and realized this doesn't. Like I said, he's in the medical field as well. He's got a strong background. So none of this made any sense to him. And he said, I looked you up, and he said, I'd heard about you. And he said, and strangely enough, most of these people hear from me on your program, as a matter of fact. I'll get probably 20 or 30 inquiries about implants just from your show alone.
After the show, sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You had a case where you got an implant from a deceased abductee. Tell me about that.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my.
I did. This is an implant that came to me, and the guy, first of all, the one that sent it to me, I'm not quite sure how he found out every detail about me, but he did his homework, and he's not in the UFO world. He's not a UFO guy at all. He said, but my father was. And he started talking about his father. And I said, well, tell me about your father. Tell me about him. He said, well, of course, he's recently passed and all that. He said, the weird thing is, he said, he loved baseball more than anything in the world. I said, well, tell me. He said his favorite player was Lou Gehrig.
Huh.
And I said, that's interesting because my father died from Lou Gehrig's disease.
Oh, boy.
And my father loved baseball more than any human being I ever saw. We started comparing notes on our fathers, and it was just amazing. And anyway, he said, my father finally told me years ago, and told the family, made everybody know it, that he had an object placed in the back of his calf during his UFO events. And, of course, we all thought, right.
Yeah, you know, right, Dad, right, you know, that kind
and
of thing.
So he said he passed away. And when he did, we called our friends who were doing preparing the body. And they said, hey, remember what Dad said? And he said, would you please look in his calf and see? And they found it, and they sent it to me.
Wow.
And I'm telling you that I've never seen anything like it.
Is that part of those that still need to be analyzed?
Oh, yes. That's number five.
What do you think these implants are used for? Are they tracking devices?
No, sir, they're not. I'm happy to mention that. And thank you for asking that, because a lot of people, there's a lot of stuff on the internet that's just not true. And one of them is that the implants are tracking devices. In fact, Stan Friedman, when he was alive, asked me the questions, because questions come up that are UFO meets, especially at Roswell,
mm-hmm.
and we're on this big panel and everything, and everybody loves Stan. Everybody.
Oh my God, I miss him.
And oh yeah, and he would. They would ask questions. Well, what about the implants for Stan? He said, well, I don't know anything about them. He said, maybe they're a tracking device or whatever. And he said, what do you think, Daryl? And I said, they're definitely not a tracking device.
Hold on for a second, Daryl. We'll pick that story right up when we come back. Daryl Sims with us, the alien hunter. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're with the alien hunter, Daryl Sims. Daryl's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Daryl, we're talking, and you said, of course, they're not tracking devices. So what could they be?
Well, it'd be easier to define what they're not, and that'll help us focus that, I think, for your audience. They're not tracking devices. They're not a transponder. If they're tracking devices, how'd they find you to begin with? Obviously, they'd be much bigger than you were at conception, as an example.
Right.
So that's out. They're not tracking. they're not a transponder. They're not for that, in my opinion, based on all my experiences since, because my implantation actually occurred when I was 12 years old, and I was wide awake when it occurred. That's how I knew implantation existed. That's where I discovered it. Not because I was particularly brilliant or anything like that, but simply because I was there and wide awake when it happened. So they appear to be for different operations. One of the best ways to kind of find out about that is to find out where it's located. And many of these people, in fact, one of them, literally, this happened last yesterday. A gentleman called me from Scotland, and his wife and him saw a UFO, and they were driving down the road, and he runs out, gets out of the car, and leaves her in the car, runs out there with his camera, and films this UFO up close. And he thinks, wow, this is really cool. You know, I'm doing great. And he doesn't really have a clue. And he said, since then, he said, I've got these horrible headaches. And we took the film back home. He said, I drove at a great speed to get back home. We checked our camera film and everything in it. And he said, the film is blank from the point I start filming the UFO.
Huh.
And he said, so it's missing. I said, well, please don't erase anything. Send it to us. Let our tech people check it out. We might be able to do something.
Right. You might salvage it or something.
He said, well, something else has happened. He said, I went to the doctor because they got these horrible headaches and nosebleeds. And they put me in this round thing. I said, it's called an MRI tank, a chamber.
I hate those tubes, by the way, Daryl. I get claustrophobic in those things.
Fortunately, they've got bigger and better ones now and more open. But anyway, he said they found a mass inside my nasal passage, a dark mass, and I can't figure out what it's doing in there. What is that?
Hmm.
And I said, you might want to have that explored. And I said, I'll actually be in England doing some presentations on my European tour whenever they let up on the virus thing here soon enough. And Steve Mayer, I'll be doing a conference for him as well. And anyway, he said, I don't know what to do. He said, what? How did all this happen? And he doesn't understand. When you went out there looking for the UFO or before, one of the two, maybe even before, that's when you and your wife had missing time. I said, that's when you, the reason you don't have anything on your film is because you probably weren't really filming at that point. You think you were. That's your screen memory. That's the false syndrome.
Do you think, what's your gut tell you based on your experience with all these devices, what's your gut tell you they might be?
Well, they're...
You sound a little baffled.
I am, because the answer, I wish it were simple. I truly do. An example, a lady contacted me. She is a pharmacologist, and she said, I want to talk to you about this implant stuff. This is really fascinating to me, and especially the alien thing. She said, Daryl, you realize you're going to find out they're learning things, or maybe already have learned things about them and what they're up to that we don't know. And I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, do you have any clues? And I said, well, yes. I said, some of the people that are abductees that have had these rare implants have found themselves with altered neurotransmitters like serotonin, dopamine,
mm-hmm.
and so on. And she said, oh, my God, if that's true, Daryl, let me explain to you what that suggests. And she said, it scared her. She later quit.
It scared her?
She just walked away. She said, whoever controls your neurotransmitters, serotonin, dopamine, but that, it doesn't matter. She said, I'm telling you, they own you. They decide whether you're happy, sad, glad, or whatever. And I said, well, I said, I can contextualize that for you. There are abductees and contactees. These are contactees being described to those people who like the contact or feel it's for our best and ultimate good and so on. That the aliens here to save the planet, fix the ozone hole or whatever, which hadn't done in a few thousand years. Or the other people like me are abductees, which are not really happy that that happened and that you basically kidnapped me to do it and so on, and our children if they came after them. And she said, yes. And I said, well, I said, I can assure you, based on my own event, that the and many, I've got over 2,000 cases worldwide, many of these events are have shown themselves to be levels of alien influence whereby they literally have gone beyond your wishes and ideals. And I could get real specific here. I'm not comfortable in doing it, but the research shows it. And people come back with phobias with that they never had before, and they can't figure out where that's from. And, of course, you do a little therapy work with them, you find out pretty quickly where that comes from. So alterations of neurotransmitters is a big one. The fact that 45% of the people taken that we've studied since the 80s are Native American, Indian, Irish, Celtic. Even it goes into the Basque community of northern Spain. But it's critical that there are two levels, abductees and contactees, because the contactees overall, and I'm not picking on anybody here at all. I would never do that.
No, I understand.
The contactees are more malleable. They're easy to manipulate for the alien. Absolutely easy.
Now, the location of the implants seem to be all over the body.
They are all over the body. In fact, originally, Roger wrote a book, and he said all these implants are on the left side of the body. And I said, Roger, you shouldn't say that. And he said, well, that's what you said. And I said, no. I said, only the ones that I've shown you are on the left side of the body. I didn't show you the ones on the right, nor did I show you the ones in the middle.
Or behind the leg and the calf and all that other stuff.
I said, you can start from the crown of the head and go all the way down. I said the easiest way to think about this, and I think your audience will greatly appreciate this, and I'll say it for the first time. If you follow meridians on the body, you'll find out more about what the implant may be about.
This is weird stuff, though, isn't it, Daryl?
Yes, sir. It is.
My gosh.
You don't have to make it up. You don't have to read into it. You don't have to go out and people do make up stuff. They'll hear this program tonight and go out and write three new books about it that are not going to be really accurate. The point is, I already wrote a book about it, and I didn't intend to, but people with implants wanted more information, so I did. But the point is that as we study this more and more, we're coming to some really great crescendos here in the research. Number one, they asked me here a while back, what would you do if you had all the money in the world? You could do anything you want. The first thing I do is grab a bunch of my abductees, pay for their flights to it, and I have the university picked out, and take people with implants there, and people have had implants removed, and have them also meet with each other and see what the results are going to be amazing. I can tell you right now. And I said, this next thing, I want all the objects that have been removed that I still have, I want them tested to see if we can basically ping them and see if there's any signal or anything that'll turn them on, so to speak. And another third thing I want to do is when we ping them, I want to see if the people in the other room notice anything, the ones that have still got them in situ, in their own body at the time. And another thing I want to do is to reinstall some of these implants back into animals and see if we can follow them, monitor them, and see if they'll come back to retrieve them. So there's a lot of fun stuff that we're just waiting to happen. It just takes money to do this.
I also understand you have something very strange in your freezer.
Yes, sir, we do. As a matter of fact, fortunately, it's not in a regular freezer. It's the one I have special for UFO work. But what I have in the freezer there is it's called a Texas Chupacabra.
A Chupacabra.
And for the audience to take the sensationalism off of it, it's also called the Texas Blue Dog.
Does it look like a dog?
It kind of. I was at my friend's home in Austin, and he's a hunter, and he literally hunts for the government. I mean, he hunts coyotes and things like this, and you have to keep certain populations down because to help the deer population.
Yeah, sadly, but you have to do that.
In balance, so that they'll all be successful. Anyway, he is listening to me talk about this. His wife helps me at Roswell every year. And she's sitting there, she big cat eating grin on her face, and she said, "You just stepped in it." He said, "Well, that's a coyote, what it is." And I said, "No, it's not." And he said, "Yes, it is." And I said, "Well, sir, no, it's not." And he said, "Darryl, this is what I do for a living." I said, "You hunt for a living. You don't hunt the Texas Chupacabra, the Texas Blue Dog." He said, "It's because it's a coyote, or it's a hybrid. That's all it is."
Or a mutant or something like that.
Thank you. So I pulled out the photograph, and he says, "Oh, my God, look at the teeth on that thing. What is this?" And I said, "I told you." And she looked at me and just grinned and says, "Just like everybody else, they think they already know." I said, "The young lady," I said, "the greatest enemy of truth is the following thing, that you think you already know what it is."
Yep.
Wow.
That's cool. And there's a picture of this on your website, isn't there?
I've not put it on the website yet. I've interestingly enough, the guy said, "I'll pay to have that thing stuffed for you." And I said, "Well, it's a little ripe right now." But I said, I do want it stuffed and mounted. But he wanted to keep it. And I said, "That's not going to happen. If you're going to do it, you're going to have to do it as a philanthropic effort like me." I said, "But there's a reason for it." I said, anyway, a lady from North Texas called. Shortly thereafter, a few days ago, as a matter of fact, a few weeks, really. And she said, "There's a strange thing that's been following me. I've got UFO events, but something's been following me." And I checked around, and she's the same as anybody in the world. She owns a nice big ranch and everything. It's a dog-like creature. But she said, "Darryl, I'm going to sound crazy here. She said, just talk to me. Tell me what you saw. It's blue. It has almost no hair." And I said, "The hind legs are longer than the forelegs, and it almost runs like a..."
How big is it, Darryl?
It's not large.
Smaller than like a Labrador?
Yeah, a little smaller and thinner. And the amazing story I told this hunter about this particular one, I said, "Why did you shoot him?" And he said, "Well, it was in my barn and everything." I said, "Well, sir, I appreciate that. But I would have rather you'd called me and let me trap it. You know, I'd rather not kill him." And he said, "Well, it was in my barn." And I said, "You've got a lot of horses here." And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well," he said, "what do you think this thing is?" He said, "Well, it's got to be a coyote or something." And I said, "But that's not a coyote." And I looked in the sack, he had it frozen all for me, and I said, "That's not a coyote, sir." And he said, "Well, it's a hybrid." And I said, "It could be. I don't know. We're going to do DNA testing on it at some point, and we'll find out. We'll have a university do it." And he says, "The weird thing is, the horses loved it."
They loved it? They got along horses, with it?
Yeah. Horses and coyotes don't mix. Coyotes tend to eat things like horses and things.
Yeah, they do. Yep.
This thing ate 16 cats at the ranch on the other 100 acres over from me. He said it ate all 16 of their cats. That's what they use to keep the rats down. And he said, "But it lives there in the barn, and I've got pictures of it. It lives in the barn with the horses. And when I was carrying the sack out of the frozen Texas Blue Dog, one of his horses is on film, comes over to me and starts sniffing the sack for his little buddy. This is weird." And a cop, is a Houston cop, went with me and filmed the whole thing. So I wanted it all filmed just for the heck of it. So at some point we will put it up and all that for sure.
Interesting, Dad. And you said when you were 12 you had a implant. Was that your first alien experience?
No, sir, it wasn't. My first experience with the alien, and it very briefly, was simply approximately four and a half years old, and literally I woke up is not the right word. it was like I was switched on, like somebody flipped a switch and they shouldn't have. And I opened my eyes. I'm sitting up in bed like, what? And there's this little skinny guy walking away from me toward the wall. And I'm thinking he's going to bump into the wall. I didn't know that he had just brought me back and we both came through it. So this was, I said to myself, who is it? Where are his clothes? It's winter, it's cold. It's freezing. And as soon as I thought that in my head, he turned around. And that was a real shock because he's got large, big black eyes, skinny little body, and his eyes are perfectly round.
Mm-hmm.
This was 1952, when I was about 4 years old.
And you remember this. My gosh.
Absolutely. My mother said, son, you couldn't remember that because you were too young. I said, Mom, we lived at 1005 South K Street, Midland, Texas. Do you want to know the phone number? How can you remember that? I said, well, I'm not stupid, Mom. I have a memory. I can remember things. I have a decent memory. And so anyways, the thing that amazed me was the entity apparently heard me thinking this stuff. We're hooked up somehow.
Hold on, Daryl. We're going to let you finish that story up, and then we're going to take an hour of phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.